Israeli-linked ship and the ships of any nation that joins the U.S. in its hostile actions against Yemen. Yusuf Mawri, Sana'a.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day he appointed for a rising. To thee belongs praise, for thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst thou willed, thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to thee belongs praise, for thou created, then proportioned, and ordained, and decreed, and gave death and bestowed life, and made sick and healed, and made well and afflicted, and sat upon the throne and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure, and provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to thee, to be joyful in worshipping thee, to be desirous of thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom thou wilt.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. It has been more than 3 months since the Israeli genocide on Gaza has been taking place, from bombs falling on their heads to being ordered to move from place to place without any fuel to not having enough food or water. Gazans literally live in hell. Now the majority of the 2.5 million Palestinians are internally displaced and living in tents. Residents feel that any moment could be their last one alive as the Israeli regime continues to indiscriminately hit anywhere from homes to hospitals to UN-run schools. Nowhere is sacred and no one is safe. Well, with this backdrop, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken calls on the Israeli regime to do more to protect civilians in Gaza. Well, I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Daniel McAdams, Executive Director of Ron Paul Institute out of Lake Jackson, Texas. Glenn Dyson, Professor of Political Science, University of Southeastern Norway out of Oslo. Thank you both for being with me. Well, let's start this off in Texas. Daniel, I'd like to hear your thoughts on the U.S. Secretary of State currently calling for the Israeli regime to do more to protect civilians in Gaza. I mean, what exactly does that mean?
Well, what is this, his fourth trip? What have they had to show for it? Absolutely nothing. At this point, do more to protect civilians. Well, they've already completely destroyed the civilian infrastructure, the 23,000 plus civilians who've been slaughtered. Now, that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Daniel, I'm so sorry. I'm going to interrupt you because I'm having some audio difficulties. Hopefully, we can take care of that, and I'll come back to you. So sorry. Glenn, I'll propose that same question then to you. What exactly does the U.S. Secretary of State means when he says that?
Well, I would agree with the former account of it. I think that it's very little, very late, because Gaza has been completely leveled. They destroyed the entire Gaza Strip. Thousands of civilians, the majority of dead are women and children. So the Israelis have already razed Gaza to the ground, and to now call for restraint, not only is it late, but it also seems somewhat disingenuous, because this is not just the United States as a third party giving recommendations or trying to pressure Israel. This is also an American war on Palestine, because it's Americans who provides the finance, it's the Americans who provides the weapons. So if the Americans wanted this war to be over, they could do it by tomorrow by simply cutting off the Israelis. So they do have a huge leverage to put pressure on Israel. But again, this is not what they're doing. I think they want to have it both ways. They would like to provide their full support to Israel to destroy Gaza, and at the same time they want to pretend as if they abide by human rights and that they're concerned for the death of civilians. So it doesn't seem very serious. I think it's a way of warming up or trying to get on the good side of various Arab leaders among the Gulf states, as Blinken is going on a tour to try to win some sympathy and win these leaders over. So I wouldn't see it being more serious than this, than a marketing campaign.
Okay. Well, Daniel, hopefully the audio is better. Now, far too many innocent Palestinians have already been killed. So this is according to Blinken. What an amazing discovery after at least 23,000 people have been murdered in Gaza and more than 3 months have passed. I mean, why does he make such a statement like, far too many innocent Palestinians have been killed? I mean, what does that mean, unless you're actually trying to stop the killing?
Well, they've been killed with American weapons and American money, so he should know better than anyone how many have been killed. I mean, the man is a complete empty suit. He's got dead eyes. In Doha, just before he was traveling to Israel, he said that the U.S. conditions all military aid on strict adherence to international and humanitarian law. I mean, he said something like that with a straight face. And the 30-some thousand people that have been killed, as I started off saying before we had the problem, that's just the tip of the iceberg. Because as we know, many times that number are going to die after you've just completely destroyed the infrastructure. There's no medicine left. There's no shelter. There's no food. So there'll be many, many times more. So for him to say now that, well, try to, if you can you please try to curtail the killing? They've already put things, they've already put the measures in place to kill far, far more more people.
And let me just stay with you, Daniel. When we look at that situation, you said they've already put the measures in place to kill far more people. What is it that the United States is getting out of this? Why does it give this blind support to Israel?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, a Biden administration, now let's not forget this is a dysfunctional administration, but also let's remember that support for Israel is bipartisan. It is the most bipartisan thing in Washington, D.C. It is the one thing that both parties, with very few exceptions, can agree on, which is a blind support for Israel and a disregard for actual U.S. national interests, which aren't in supporting Israel by any stretch of the imagination. There really is nothing in it for the administration, but President Biden set the stage initially after the October 7 situation, where he flew over to Israel and basically gave them the green light to do anything they wanted. We're not going to put any brakes on you. You can do whatever we want, whatever you want. And by the way, here's the money and weapons to do so. Even bypassed Congress twice now to send more weapons to Israel illegally without congressional approval. So it's a knee-jerk reaction. But the interesting thing development here is that something very different has happened, which is that public opinion in the United States for once is not going along with the leadership. Now, recent polls have showed that barely half of Americans, and that includes Republicans and evangelical Christians, barely half of Americans support aid to Israel. That's the first time in history. So something is shifting in the United States, and it's very, very important.
All right, crossing back over now to Oslo and Glenn. I mean, since the start of this onslaught in October, we've seen many officials worldwide talking about the inhumanity taking place in Gaza during the war on kids, but not really any international organizations nor countries, for that matter, that have been able to bring this war to an end. Why not?
Well, I don't think there has been any real desire or any real effort. I mean, even a call for a ceasefire hasn't been done. I think what really happened is over the past decades, I think the U.S. and its partners have always been almost on autopilot to provide unconditional support for Israel. And of course, on the 7th of October, when Hamas sprung this attack in which civilians were killed, I think there was this immediate instinct to, again, provide full unconditional support for Israel. And again, Israel could do no wrong. This was effectively the argument from the leaders. And then, of course, the Israeli began to, well, what many saw as taking advantage of this by effectively carrying out an operation of ethnic cleansing to, well, remove the Palestinians from Gaza, either, you know, kill them or drive them off the land. And they're already talking about annexing the region. So once it went from bad to worse, I think it was difficult for many Western leaders to walk this back in terms of taking a more critical position. But I think as this becomes evident, it's not just ethnic cleansing, it's also genocide. I think more leaders are now feeling that they have to at least take a rhetorical, critical view in which they criticize the excessive use of violence, but still commit themselves to the usual slogans that, you know, Israel has a right to exist without specifying within what borders, for example. So I think this is the direction that they're taking it. So again, provide some verbal criticism for Israel while not actually doing anything to stop the bloodshed.
Right, right. Well, Daniel, after everything that the Israeli regime has done and is doing, what are your thoughts on the comments made by the French foreign minister, who said that Iran and its affiliates must stop destabilizing acts which could spark a broader conflict in the Middle East?
Well, projection is the one unified Western foreign policy. always accuse others of what you're doing, hence the endless accusations that Putin invaded Ukraine and is attacking Ukraine when in fact it was Ukraine attacking Russians in eastern Ukraine for so many years. And this is the situation, you know, in the U.S., a failure of diplomacy is a failure to objectively understand the world as it is, not as you wish it were. And that's the problem with the neocons and neoconservatives who run Washington. They don't see the world in a realistic way. They see it as they wish it were. And so they completely fail to understand or to take into account the domestic considerations within Israel. Now, Netanyahu has been facing for years extreme pressure from both sides. He's been an enormous amount of legal pressure, legal problems that have amounted. There are about thousands and thousands of people demonstrating in front of his residence every day that's never reported in the Western media. And so October 7th seemed to me to be a very convenient way for him to appease the radical settlers on the right who really, and they have been completely open. I'm not conjuring this out of thin air. They are looking for a final solution to the Palestinian problem. And in different varying ways of saying that, there have been several Israeli politicians who've overtly said that. And even Netanyahu himself has said, we need to resettle Palestinians outside of Palestine. So it's the most open and I would almost say honest incidents of ethnic cleansing we've seen in many, many decades.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, Blinken also said while he was in the region that Palestinians must be allowed to return to their homes after the war and must not be displaced from Gaza. This as Israeli regime officials, as Daniel just pointed out, continue to make inflammatory and genocidal statements about the removal of the majority of Gaza's population. Let's talk about these different perspectives that are given off publicly. What does it mean when the U.S. is saying this, Israel is saying this? Do you think there really is a difference of opinion, or how do you assess that?
I think it's a different way of framing it or marketing oneself, because you're correct. There's very contradictory message. On one hand, the Israelis are very openly stating that, you know, they want, again, more or less a final solution. They don't want to have the Palestinians there anymore. Meanwhile, the United States is arguing that, you know, they're not deliberately targeting civilians. So there's obviously a disconnect. And in terms of, you know, we see the same with expanding the war. They, you know, the Americans are warning, the war might expand, like there's some third party. But again, they're the one participating in the genocide. They're assisting and supporting striking Lebanon, striking Yemen, striking Iraq, Syria, and most likely behind this terrorist attack in Iran as well. So it's just it's very strange, the rhetoric. It doesn't seem to coincide with the actions that are being taken. So I don't see much that much difference on the European side either. I think they would like to try to maintain some of the humanitarian image and reputation, but still, I don't think that will translate into any various restrictions on Israel or actually putting pressure.
Well, speaking of the European side, the Italian foreign minister, Daniel, has said that G7 major powers are working with Israel to secure a rapid end to its devastating war in Gaza and to reduce civilian casualties. I mean, what are your thoughts on this statement and the use of the word rapid when it has already been more than 3 months since the start of this genocide.
Yeah, you're closing the barn door when the horses are already out is essentially what they're doing. I think the professor makes a great point. They're trying to save face now at this point when the damage has already been done. They're going to go back to their homes. What homes are they going to go back to? Anyone who bothers to have a look at what it looks like in Gaza right now would understand there's no issue of going back to the homes. And forget about just the physical buildings. The infrastructure is completely destroyed. Water, sanitation. We've seen horrific pictures of raw sewage in the streets in Gaza. It's a complete disaster and impossible to go back to. But, you know, I would point out there is kind of a schizophrenia, and the professor, again, makes a great point, which is that on the one hand, the U.S. is escalating and encouraging the escalation of this. On the other hand, they're telling Israel, don't escalate. You know, there was a fascinating article in the Washington Post yesterday. And we should read the Washington Post like the Soviet citizens read Pravda in the old days, which is you're seeing what the deep state wants you to think. And it's a fascinating piece talking about the dangers of escalation. And I think it's the deep state trying to find a way out of this. And they highlight, for example, a Defense Intelligence Agency investigation showing that if Israel expands the war completely against Hezbollah in the north, it may not survive. It may not win. And the losses could be, I think the number was 300,000 to 500,000 on both sides for a massive war. So they're clearly looking for a way out of this, while at the same time, what kinds of sticks do they have? Blinken only comes with carrots. Here's more money. Please stop killing Palestinians. No, we want to keep doing it. Thanks very much. Can you please send us more money? Okay, here's more money and weapons. This is an absolute complete failure. I've never seen such incompetence in diplomacy, probably in the history of the world.
Is it incompetence, though, Daniel? Is it incompetence, or has it been created to do exactly what it's doing? On the one hand, to show, as the professor said, that they actually really want to end this conflict, but at the same time continuing and allowing the conflict to go on.
Well, there's no peace camp in Washington, D.C. Now, Americans, as I mentioned earlier, are not in favor of continuing or escalating support for Israel, particularly and interestingly enough, when you look at younger Americans who don't have the same baggage. The support for Israel is much, much lower among young Americans. You see a lot more protests, hence the crackdowns on free speech in the U.S. universities that we've seen. But absolutely, Washington, D.C. is walking lockstep. And if Biden does anything to de-escalate, well, he'll have the Republicans on his back saying, Biden is showing weakness in the Middle East. Why aren't we bombing Yemen already? Why aren't we bombing Iran? They're going to go Lindsey Graham on everyone if Biden even does show some diplomacy. So I grant that to you. That's a very, very, very good point. Crocodile tears are being cried, I think.
Well, Glenn, do you think that these Western countries or Western regimes have totally discredited themselves since this genocide has started? Your assessment of that, whether we're talking about the United States, we start off with the United States, or we look at the UK and we look at the other European powers and what they have said and what they have done, and then to see that this genocide is continuing. Your assessment?
No, I think definitely, and this is something that's recognized in the Western media as well, which is that the Americans and Europeans have been really, over the past 2 years, been lobbying the global south very heavy to portray the Russians as these evil imperialists, while the West, you know, we stand on the side of, you know, human rights and decency and human dignity. And then, again, this is also based on our false narrative, of course. But then we have this war now against the Palestinians, and it's all thrown away. We have our leaders watching and enabling a genocide happening, and can't even ask for a ceasefire. And so I think it's some of it is caused by simply blind loyalty to the United States for the Europeans, because 2 years ago there might have been more opposition, but these days, especially after 2 years of having a war in Europe, the Europeans have become completely obedient to the United States, and the U.S. no longer prioritizes its own national interest above serving Israel. So there's something very, very irrational which is happening, because this is it's very hard for me to even understand how this is in the U.S. interest to to alienate themselves among all these countries in the Middle East, and set Israel in this position when it's effectively go to war against everyone. One of the strengths of Israel has always been to isolate all the other ones, pin the regional actors against each other, and then target one state. But what's happening now, it doesn't make any sense. Even if you would want to exterminate the Palestinians, this seems to be a very strange way to go about it. So it's for me, it's very, very rational what's happening.
Daniel, how do you see this playing itself out? On the one hand, Glenn just said that basically the U.S. are actually creating or having policies that it's not in the national interest. You talked about the growing number of young people who actually are against the Israeli regime. But at the same time, this genocide is continuing. Your assessment of this, do you think that they want to just continue basically just wearing down the Palestinians and that this will be extended? Or how do you see it playing out at this point in time?
Well, probably they're counting on fatigue among Americans who are tired of seeing, if they've seen any suffering Palestinians, they'll be tired. And we have a very low, very short attention span in the U.S. When Zelensky was the flavor of the month, we all wanted to, not me, but America wanted to wear Ukrainian flags, and then they dropped them as quickly as they could when he was no longer the flavor of the month. But I think in terms of how do I see it playing out, I think one of the things we're not reading about, and this was reported earlier today, which is that the Israeli government announced in advance of Blinken's arrival another very large drawdown of its troops from Gaza. And I think that can mean one of a couple of things. First of all, and it's not being reported, which is that the Israelis have been very good at killing unarmed civilians, but they've not been as competent in fighting Hamas fighters. And that is a fact. You're looking at, I've seen hundreds of videos of Hamas fighters using essentially homemade RPG weapons to blow up Israeli tanks. Apparently, there have been thousands of casualties in terms of dead and severely wounded that have been admitted by the Defense Ministry of Israel. So you have Israel actually going toe-to-toe with a Hamas that is adept at urban warfare, and they have been gifted by the IDF so many firing positions by the blowing up of Gaza. These guys can hide anywhere. The Israeli soldiers have said, we're fighting ghosts here. It's not going well for the Israeli military on the ground. And the Israeli economy, remember, these are hundreds of thousands of people that have been conscripted that normally would be driving buses or whatever they do there. They're not doing that. The economy is in shambles. These guys are getting killed. And now they're looking for a way out, I think. But one of the ways out may be to expand the war to Lebanon with the understanding that the U.S. will back Israel up.
We have to continue this hopefully another time, but we are out of time. I appreciate both of you being with me, Glenn Dyson, professor of political science, University of Southeastern Norway, out of Oslo, and Daniel McAdams, executive director, Ron Paul Institute of Lake Jackson, Texas. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing off for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran.
From east to west, throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio.
Leaders meeting with people of Kerman and Khuzestan provinces. On Saturday, 23rd of December 2023, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, had a meeting with two groups of people from Kerman and Khuzestan provinces. At this meeting, which was held in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya in Tehran, the leader talked about the qualities and the characteristics of the people of Kerman and Khuzestan provinces. In this program, we discuss the leader's remarks and points of view expressed at this meeting. Please stay with us. On Saturday, 23rd of December, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, had a meeting with a large group of people from Kerman and Khuzestan provinces. The leader talked about the qualities and characteristics of the people of Kerman and Khuzestan provinces. Commenting on Khuzestan province, the leader said this province is one of the principal centers of the Iranian nation's resistance. He added, Khuzestan has been one of the key important centers of the Iranian nation's resistance during the past 130 years. The people of Khuzestan have been a symbol of the Iranian nation's resistance during this period. Commenting further, Ayatollah Khamenei said, the British army had taken control of Iraq and they wanted to dominate and control certain parts of Iran as well. The people of Khuzestan stood against the British based on the fatwa of the religious scholars or ulama of Najaf, such as the late Mirza Muhammad Taqi Shirazi and others. During my trip to Khuzestan province several years ago, they brought me the flag of that great battle to me, and I gifted it to Astana Quds Razavi. That flag, which belongs to the people of Khuzestan, is still there. These are important matters in history. They're very valuable. The people of Khuzestan stood up firmly against the British, and not just to defend their own province, but indeed to defend the entire nation. Commenting further, the leader said, during the nationalization of the Iranian oil industry in the early 1950s, Khuzestan was the place of confrontation between the British and the Iranians, in which the Abadan oil refinery, which was in the hands of the British, was seized along with other areas and centers that the British had created for themselves. The people of Khuzestan were right on the front lines of this great confrontation. And most important of all is the resistance of the people of Khuzestan during Saddam's invasion of Iran in 1980. The people of Khuzestan were the first to rise up in defense of the Islamic Republic of Iran. A miscalculation that Saddam had made was that he assumed if he were to attack the cities of Khuzestan, the local Arabs who lived there would join forces with him against their own country. But the Iraqi dictator Saddam had made this miscalculation. The first people who stood up firmly to the Ba'athist enemy were the same people whom Saddam had counted on. A dear martyr of ours, General Ali Hashemi, may God bless his soul, is one such example. Saddam's soldiers had heard about him during the early days of the war, and they spent several years looking for him. They were after Ali Hashemi. The tribes of Khuzestan province, including Arabs, non-Arabs, Lur and Bakhtiari tribe, etc., were the first people who rose up against Saddam Hussein's invasion of Iran. That is a great honor for this province. Khuzestan is an outstanding province from another aspect as well. The blood of the martyrs from all of the country's provinces have been spilled on Khuzestan soil. But what does that mean? This means that Khuzestan is a symbol of the Iranian nation's solidarity and unity. Young people from all over Iran fought with faith and motivation and sacrificed their lives for the cause of Islam, Iran, and the Islamic Republic. Everything we had heard about the heroism of the Iranian nation throughout history, their dedication, their sacrifices, and their resilience, we saw with our own eyes in Khuzestan province during the sacred defense years. Therefore, Khuzestan became a manifestation of the Iranian nation's outstanding features. Returning to Kerman province, the leader said, "As for Kerman province, during the many years in which I have become acquainted with the people of this province, I have seen many shining stars among them. I would like to mention the deep cultural identity in this province and how elites are trained here. This training of elites is one of the features of Kerman province. The moral decency and sincere faith of the people of Kerman province is quite remarkable." Turning to Kerman province's most famous revolutionary icon, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said, "Yes, just one Qasem Soleimani is enough for not just Kerman province, but for the entire nation of Iran. We are proud of him, this is true, but the important question is, what is the cultural basis that trains someone like Qasem Soleimani? We should make use of this culture. Of course, this cultural basis always exists, but without an Islamic revolution and an Islamic republic, these capabilities will not be manifested. When an Islamic republic is established, these people emerge one after another. People like Martyr Hossein Alamul Huda, Martyr Ali Hashemi, Martyr Muhammad Ibrahim Hemmat, and Martyr Haj Qasem Soleimani. I want to tell you, the dear youth of Khuzestan and Kerman provinces, to be proud of these traits. Be proud of and appreciate this generational and historical heritage, and use these characteristics to build the future of your country." Turning to science and technology, the leader said, "Based on our past, we should be leading the world's caravan of science today, but this is not the case. Today, we should have been clearly showing the rules and teachings of Islam in every part of people's lives in this country. We should have been showing Islam's capacity to run a country. We have failed to do this, and we are behind. This backwardness must be compensated for. Young people can be the driving engine for advancement of this country. The youth can do this, and may God protect all of you and bless you." Commenting on parliamentary and assembly of experts elections on 1st of March 2024, the leader said, "In about 2 months from now, we will have two important elections in this country. The Iranian nation should be prepared for these two elections in the best possible way. One of these elections is for the assembly of experts. The significance of the Assembly of Experts is that it can choose the right leader for the country whenever necessary, and over time it can monitor and oversee that the right conditions and qualities are maintained in the present leader of the revolution. This is the importance of the Assembly of Experts elections. But the Majlis parliamentary elections are also very important, and both elections are held simultaneously. According to the constitution, the Islamic Consultative Assembly, the Majlis, the Iranian parliament, sets the course for the country's future. If the country faces problems, legislation and the resourceful presence of the Majlis, the parliament, is required to solve these problems." The leader added, "When I spoke to the Iranian nation at the beginning of this year, I mentioned four specifications for these elections. These are 1. Full participation of the people, 2. True competition, 3. Fairness in the true sense of the word, and 4. Election security." Commenting further, Ayatollah Khamenei said, "These four specifications must be met, and I will say a few words about them. Why do we have elections? I say that both the Republic and the Islamic aspect of the Islamic Republic of Iran are dependent on elections. Republic means having a democratic government, that is, the country's governance should be in the hands of the people. But how are people supposed to be involved in the country's governance? This can only be achieved through elections. Some people trying to find fault with the need to hold elections. They discourage the people. They do not pay attention to the fact that if there are no elections in the country, there will be a dictatorship, chaos and insecurity. The antidote to chaos and insecurity is elections. Elections are the right way by which the people can ensure national sovereignty, democracy and having a republic in the country. Elections can choose and establish Wali Faqih, or the guardian of the Islamic jurist of the country. That is, they can ensure an Islamic system of government. Elections can choose the representative of the Majlis or the parliament to formulate laws for the admission of the country in accordance with Islamic guidelines and Islamic teachings and principles. Therefore, both having a republic and being Islamic relies on elections. So, in the system of the Islamic Republic of Iran, elections are vital and necessary. In these elections, those 4 points that I mentioned earlier must be met. The first is full participation. Participation means the enthusiastic participation of all the people in the election. An enthusiastic participation of the people shows national unity and the Iranian nation's desire to be present in the scene. National power ensures national unity and national security. When a country has security, then science will advance in that country, the economy will flourish, and the country's cultural, economic, and political problems can be solved. Thus, people's participation in the elections is very necessary for this to happen. Turning to competition in the upcoming elections, the leader said, "What is the meaning of competition? One of the most important issues in election is competition. Competition means everyone should be able to campaign for themselves, but this needs to be done correctly. Election campaigning should be done in an ethical, honest fashion. Campaigning is not slandering others, it is not lying, and it is not making false promises. Campaigning means a person telling their opinions to the people. This is campaigning, and God willing, this opportunity should be given to everyone. And of course, fairness and security are also a requirement for the elections." Turning to Israel's genocidal war in the Gaza Strip, Ayatollah Khamenei said, "As for the international and Islamic issue of Gaza, 2.5 months have passed since the start of the tragedy in Gaza. This tragedy is an unprecedented phenomenon in recent history of the Islamic world. In modern history, perhaps in the last century, there has never been anything similar to this tragedy. It is an unparalleled tragedy. But how is it unprecedented? This event is unprecedented in two ways. From the aspect of the Zionist regime, this event is unprecedented, because never before has the Zionist regime sown such brutality, criminality, and bloodthirstiness. It is unprecedented due to the way that the Zionist regime is killing children and dropping bunker-busting bombs on patients in hospitals. This kind of cruelty and evil is totally unprecedented. And on the other hand, from the side of the Palestinian people and Palestinian fighters, such steadfastness, such patience, and such resilience and resistance is also unprecedented. The Palestinians of Gaza, the Palestinian resistance fighters, are standing like a rock, like a mountain. This is something important. Even though water, food, medicine and fuel are not reaching the people of Gaza, they're still standing strong and refusing to surrender. This is very important. This unwillingness to surrender will make them victorious in the end, and signs of victory are already visible. The leader of the Islamic Revolution quoted this ayah from the Holy Quran. Indeed, God is with those who are patient. One of the key points in this matter is that the Zionist regime's defeat is not just the defeat of the Zionist regime, it is also the defeat of the United States of America. In the world today, no one says that the Zionist regime is different from the United States or Britain. Everyone knows that they are all the same. The Israeli regime, Britain and the United States are the same. The United States shamelessly vetoes UN Security Council resolutions that have called for an end to fighting in Gaza. There is no difference between the United States and the Israeli regime. They're all the same. What does it mean to veto UN Security Council resolutions which condemn Israel and call for a cessation of hostilities in Gaza? It means the United States is complicit in the dropping of bombs on Palestinian children, Palestinian women, the elderly and the defenseless. The US has been disgraced. The mask covering the true face of Western civilization has fallen off. The Palestinian nation's great victory is that it has discredited the West, the United States of America in particular, and their false claims of human rights. Today, everyone in the world is aware of the masquerades of the United States. They know what the truth is behind use of words like human rights and such things. The monstrous and evil face of the United States and Britain has become apparent for everyone to see. And finally, the leader wished God's greetings and blessings and mercy upon all those present.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.